really like the dark side. I think I'm really drawn to that. You know, anyone who reads murder mysteries will own up to the fact that they kind of like the dark side of the world. And Wicked Bugs was a follow-up to Wicked Plants. So, I started with the plants and was really thinking about how the fact that there is this dark side to the world of horticulture and botany, and there's a lot of poisons in the plant world, and there are murders that have been committed, and so on and so forth. And it was not much of a leap to get from there to bugs.
Well, I think anyone who's ever had a spider web around their house and paid attention to it over a few days realizes that the insect world can be very dark.
Oh, yeah, definitely. You know, spiders, and I should say for all the entomologists out there,
yes,
that I had to use the term bugs. I need a simple term for creepy, crawly critters. But, of course, there are spiders and there are worms and there are other things that are not properly called bugs or insects. But, yeah, spiders, I mean, I have this tendency to want to leave a spider web in my house so I can watch what's going on. One year I had this giant European cross spider in my kitchen window, and I was fascinated with it, and I called my local entomologist friend and told him about it, and he said, well, that's great, but what you need to know is that it's October, which means that she's pregnant. And at any point, she's going to be giving birth to about 200 little babies, and you might not want all of them in your kitchen. I said, okay, I'm putting her outside.
You, of course, as you might expect, there are chapters here devoted to the black widow and the brown recluse. But I want to start with what I think is the scourge of the universe, and that is the chigger.
Yes. Well, interesting that that's the one you go right to. I take it you've had some run-ins with it.
I have, and they have been epic, and they have been horrible.
Yes, the chigger mite. Well, a terrible creature. Now, does not transmit a lot of disease here in the United States. It's very annoying, though, and it's a terrible, terrible bite. But, you know, for instance, in Southeast Asia, when our troops were there in, fighting in the Pacific Theater, you know, World War II, they really became infected with terrible diseases as a result of the chigger mite. Scrub typhus is a nasty disease that really made life miserable for our soldiers and kept them in the hospital a lot longer than things like malaria did.
And the chigger, I think there's been a misconception for some time that the chigger burrows in and that's what you're scratching. But the annoyance that's left, that irritation, is after the mite has already jumped off your body, right?
Yeah, they do leave their little feeding tube behind.
Ugh.
So that's something that if you look closely, you might see it like a tiny little, almost like a splinter. But yeah, part of what's so awful about that bite is actually that it's not a very good biter as opposed to, say, a mosquito. A chigger mite can't really get at you very well, and so they just sort of bite in without looking around for a blood vessel. And so that's why it ends up being such a messy and awful and irritating bite.
You mentioned that when you wrote your book, Wicked Plants, you talked about poisons. Poisons enter into wicked bugs as well, and there's evidence through history that people have used ground up poisonous bugs to put on tips of spears.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, arrow poisons. And, you know, this is really fascinating. It is surprisingly hard to find much out about arrow poisons because they really are the secret formula of one tribe or another. So there have been lots of attempts to guess at what goes on them or to try to observe these rituals of making poison arrow tips. But, yeah, they can involve everything from scorpions to venomous spiders, and then usually even a little bit of rattlesnake venom thrown in for good measure. So really just whatever is available in the natural world that seems toxic. A lot of poisonous plants got used for arrow poisons as well.
And bugs and insects have been used in warfare for as long as we've been creating war.
Yeah, I was really surprised by that. You know, you think of the Greeks and the Romans, and a lot of people have heard of this, that they would sort of make their own beehives, maybe out of straw, and fill it with, you know, angry swarming bees or hornets, and catapult it over the enemy's walls. So it's this very Monty Python-esque idea, right, of pulling up a catapult and tossing bees at the enemy. But this has gone on even in the 20th century. The Japanese, during World War II, worked on a program to drop plague-infested fleas into California. And they were ready to do it. They had these clay bombs they'd built, and the fleas would survive impact and could spread the plague. They even tested it in China, and there were little outbreaks of the plague in China. So they were ready to go with that. Now, even today, the Department of Defense has developed this program, or they're working on a program, to implant a computer chip inside a caterpillar, in the hopes that the caterpillar will turn into a butterfly and that the Department of Defense will be able to remotely control the butterfly's flight path and send it into enemy territory to do surveillance, if you can imagine.
You know, it sounds crazy, but who
sounds
knows?
Sounds crazy, but it just might work. They thought of crazier things. The same department that's working on this is the one that essentially came up with the Internet. So you never know what they're going to think of next.
I'm talking with Amy Stewart. Her latest book is titled Wicked Bugs. It's about just that. Until I had read this book, I had never heard of the Schmidt Sting Pain Index. But I'm so happy it exists.
It's a wonderful thing. This is Justin Schmidt, and he's an amazing guy, by the way. He's an entomologist who has studied all manner of stinging insects, bees and ants in particular he is fascinated with. And he realized early on in his research that no one had ever scientifically quantified the pain from various types of stings. And originally, he started out just doing a numerical scale. But once some natural history and science magazines got a hold of his research, it became necessary to make the scale a little more interesting. So now every bee and ant is described kind of in the way that you would describe wine, like the sweat bee, which hardly hurts at all, is called light and ephemeral and almost fruity. And then there's like the tarantula hawk, which described as like a running hairdryer being dropped into your bubble bath. So it's a very vivid and entertaining pain index.
And there's something called the bullet ant that's at the top of this pain index.
Yes, it's a 1-4 scale, and this one is off the charts. It's sort of a 4+. And it's described as being like fire walking over flaming charcoal with a 3-inch rusty nail in your heel. Most of us don't even want to imagine what that is like, but nonetheless.
No, and when you see that a fire ant only rates a 1.2, I can't imagine then the 4.0 plus of the bullet ant.
I mean, that's one thing, is it kind of puts our own pests in perspective. And that's really true throughout the book, that I really gained a very healthy perspective about how relatively little we are plagued by insects as compared to other parts of the world.
The insects that you write about in Wicked Bugs, the bugs and the other animals that you write about, you give them each a different sort of honor. Some are called dangerous, some are called destructive, some are called horrible.
Horrible.
I would assume, to me, that seems like the most frightening tag that you can give.
Well, horrible usually means that they're gross, but that they're not really going to inflict any long-lasting damage on us. But, you know, for instance, I put maggots in the horrible category, right?
Mm-hmm.
They don't really hurt us that much. I mean, it sounds awful to have the larva of a fly want to burrow under your skin. But, in fact, you're probably going to survive it. And weirdly, a lot of creatures like that, these little fly larvae that we call maggots, if they do burrow under the skin, they actually excrete some very healthy little enzymes and some antibiotics to keep the wound clean so that they can stay in there and survive and do what they want to do. So, in fact, you might not even get any kind of infection, but it is nonetheless horrible.
Well, one group of people that kind of likes maggots and the animals that you call the corpse eaters, that collection, are coroners or investigators, because it can help solve a crime.
Oh, yeah. Well, forensic entomology is, you know, a fascinating field, and it can help solve a crime afterwards. So, for instance, there was a very interesting case, a woman who died, and there were different bugs, let's say, you know, living on her remains, and normally you can look at the age of them and you can tell how long she's been dead. Well, they had these creatures, these larvae, at different stages of their life, and it made it very confusing. They couldn't figure out the time of death, which made it harder to solve the case. And a forensic entomologist was able to figure out that she had done cocaine right before she died. and that the larvae that were near her face where the cocaine were grew at a faster rate and appeared to be older than they really were. And that proved to be a really pivotal point in solving the case.
I'm talking with Amy Stewart. She's written the book Wicked Bugs. Boy, there's so many that we could talk about. The stink bug that brings, if not fear, but brings a sigh to people who live in certain parts of the country when autumn arrives, because they can just burrow into your house and, I guess, emit a rather unpleasant odor.
Yeah, I mean, and we're talking here particularly about the brown marmorated stink bug, which is an Asian invader. And this is not just a few little bugs coming in the house. This can be hundreds and hundreds of stink bugs coming in the house, climbing up the Christmas tree and taking their place among the Christmas ornaments. You open the drawer to get out a spoon or a fork in the morning, and they're in there. I mean, they're really everywhere. So they're a pretty awful pest just in terms of having them around the house. They're not necessarily going to stink unless you attempt to vacuum them up, which is what people do, and then that releases the terrible odor. And they are starting to eat some crops, so they're going to get to be a bigger and bigger agricultural pest, I think, as time goes on.
Don't get me wrong. I love the text in this book. It's the words are great, and what I learn is fantastic, but there is artwork involved in Wicked Bugs that is just stunning.
Yeah, the art is pretty amazing. This is a young woman named Bryony Morrow Cribbs. She was 25 when she started on Wicked Plants. I think she's about 30 now, but young, still in school. And what she has done are copper plate etchings. So when you look at these illustrations, you have to see that every little line and every dot is done by hand on a plate of copper. She wears a jeweler's mask when she works because it's such a fine level of detail. And then she inks the plate and makes a print, very much the way books were illustrated 200 or 300 years ago. I mean, there is nothing digital involved in the making of this art. It's a very old craft, and she's done an extraordinary job.
It's hard to imagine a better-looking worm or African hornet or whatever. I mean, these are just gorgeous.
Yeah, she manages to be very accurate but also make them seem kind of creepy, which was, of course, what we needed.
So are you the type of person that has no problem picking up a bug and looking at it and inspecting it?
Yeah, that's true. I'm pretty fearless when it comes to bugs. I want to get right down on the floor and have a look at them. And if there's a bug in the house, I'm the one who will go and get it and put it outside. And, you know, one of the things I learned in the process of writing this book is that, for the most part, bugs do not want to hurt us. They're unwilling to sting. They really want to be left alone. And most of them are physically incapable of harming us. And this is particularly true with spiders. You know, a lot of the spiders that you see around your house and garden couldn't hurt you if they wanted to. They can't break your skin. They can't do anything. So, I'm a big bug lover. I have, though, come to realize that a little healthy fear can be a good thing.
Oh.
You know, I mean, I managed to round up 100 or so bugs that are murderous or deadly or dangerous, and it's kind of like the fear that keeps you from walking across the freeway at rush hour. That's a good thing. So I have learned to keep a wide berth from some. And I think it's particularly important for people traveling. You know, maybe you go on a tropical vacation, you go to Thailand or somewhere. You have to remember that there are a lot of creatures there that we are just not used to seeing and dealing with here at home. And I do have a lot of stories about unsuspecting tourists who got themselves in a little bit of trouble with a wicked bug.
Yes, you do. We have to talk about the emerald cockroach wasp. This is a fascinating creature.
It is fascinating, and, you know, I tried to steer away from just bugs that eat other bugs, because that's not very wicked. That's just what they're supposed to do. That's how nature was meant to work. But there are certain bugs that will actually inhabit the body of other bugs, and so I called them zombies. I could not resist having a chapter on zombies. And the emerald cockroach wasp is actually able to sting the cockroach's brain in this very particular place that disables its desire to fight or flee or run away, which by itself is amazing. Like, who knew the cockroach had more than one part
exactly
of its brain, right? And once she does that, she can lead it around like a dog on a leash. She can just grab it by its antenna and say, come over here with me. and she lays it down, and she lays her eggs on it, and then she takes off. She's done with motherhood at that point. She's like, you watch the kids, I'm out of here. And the cockroach just lays there and lets the eggs hatch, and the little larvae eat away at the cockroach, and it allows that to happen. And, of course, eventually it dies, and its body becomes a cocoon for all these little baby wasps who will eventually grow up and go off and find other cockroaches to do that to.
If when the second printing of this book, or when it comes out in paperback, the blurb that should be on here is, read to the end and you will feel sorry for a cockroach. That was the takeaway for me. I just felt so sorry reading about it, the cockroach there.
I know. Who knew we could ever have sympathy for a cockroach?
The name of the book is Wicked Bugs, the Louse that Conquered Napoleon's Army and Other Diabolical Insects. Amy, you've done plants, you've done insects. Are you thinking of continuing?
You know, somebody just last night told me I should do wicked rodents next.
Ooh, okay.
I know. Yeah, I don't know if I'm going to go there or not. We'll see.
That might test your fearless model there.
I know, it might.
Amy, thanks so much for your time.
Oh, thank you.